The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church and the world, and we say just love. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, and just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Yes, we have to think about the big policy issues, the big issues of our day, and how they impact the compassion and justice that is part of the world that we live in. But we can't use that as an excuse to absent ourselves from the personal responsibility to make our world more just and more compassionate simply by doing it, by loving God, loving our neighbor, loving ourselves. So nobody is exempt. We're all called to make our world more just and more compassionate. And what a better time to kind of renew our commitment to do that other than the time of Advent. And we're now approaching Advent. Tomorrow is going to be the first Sunday of Advent. And so what I've said to people in my church last Sunday, I know there's a difference between Advent and Lent, but maybe we could consider Advent a little bit like a mini Lent, in a sense, a mini time for us to kind of renew ourselves in anticipation of the celebration of the birth of Jesus. And so I am just delighted that we today are going to be speaking with David Smith and Michael Konya, who is the executive director and president of the board of Leo House, which is one of the organizations, Catholic Charities, that we're very proud of in New York. And they are, which they're going to talk to us a lot about, but they're the face of Christian and Catholic hospitality in New York City. So I'm going to begin by giving a little bit of a plug. If you are coming to New York City, and I hope you do, we're really a friendly group, even though some people don't think we are, but we're pretty friendly. But if you're coming to New York City from throughout the country, I'm recommending this great place to stay, Leo House, which is in Chelsea, one of those kind of chic-ish neighborhoods of New York City. And, you know, you got to pay, but it's a very reasonable place in New York City. So we're going to be speaking with Michael and David in just a little bit, and then a little bit later on in this show, we're going to speak with Carolyn Brennan, who works for Catholic Relief Services. And in light of the fact that the Pope is visiting two countries this week, Myanmar and Bangladesh, we're going to be speaking with Carolyn Brennan, who has just come back within the past month from Bangladesh. And we're going to be speaking about kind of what's going on there in light of the Pope's trip and some of the work that Catholic Relief Services is doing. So I am just delighted that that we kind of have a show that I think is incredibly welcoming. And as we celebrate the coming of Jesus during this Advent season, I'm delighted that David Smith and Michael Konyas is with us from Leo House. David and Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to come into the studio today.
Thank you, Monsignor, for having us, and you're most welcome.
Well, and I'm just so sorry that we're on radio, because we have just two of the most friendly faces of Catholic hospitality in New York looking at me here. And I'm sorry, listeners, you can't see it, but you're just going to have to take my word for it. So let me begin, and I'm going to just go back and forth, because I know both of you, and both of you have a wealth of information which you so want to share. And so let me begin with you, Michael. Can you tell us why Leo House is now like long old? It's an old place, right?
Yes, it is. The St. Raphael Society, which is our membership organization, was started in the late 1870s, and the Leo House itself was incorporated in 1889 as a result of authorization by Pope Leo XIII.
Now, most organizations, when they're founded, is there's something going on at that time that says, hey, we got to respond. Something's going on. So what was going on in New York in the late 19th century that caused Leo House to kind of be established?
Waves of German Catholic immigrants were coming by the millions into the United States. The Anschluss of 1871 had created the new German Empire.
Okay.
And not everybody in Germany was happy with the new German Empire. And they, one of the reasons why Catholics, German Catholics in New York particularly, loved Pope Leo XIII, he spent a great deal of time and energy and resources rebuilding the Catholic Church in Germany.
Okay.
And so that's why we are his namesake. But in other words, he said to us and to our founder, Peter Paul Kahensley.
Oh, it wasn't you? You
no, it wasn't
there?
Me. Oh, okay. I wasn't there in 1889.
Okay.
I'm not quite that old.
You look incredible. It's a young, smiling face that is next to me, well-preserved, but...
Thank you.
I think I was the founder, Monsignor.
Well, you know, now you were around with St. Peter. Let me tell you.
That's correct.
Go ahead, Michael.
But the mission was to have a place where German Catholics coming into New York, and we were literally across the street from what was then Castle Garden.
So right now you're located in Chelsea, but that wasn't where you were originally founded.
No.
You were founded where?
We were literally right next door to what is today the Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton on State Street. And the first thing you did when you got before Ellis Island came into existence, immigrants came to Castle Garden at the bottom of Manhattan Island.
Right.
And when they came out, there were usually German businessmen that had a big sign saying, Willkommen in Amerika, Deutsche Katholisches, meaning welcome to America, German Catholics.
So now Michael, let me ask you a question about that, because I was just, this is the the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, and I had to give a talk in Berlin, and so I went down to Wittenberg, where the Reformation began. We kind of have a sense, maybe wrongly, that Germany is kind of divided. The further away you got from Rome, in the northern parts, they tended to be Protestant. The closer to Rome, maybe Bavaria, other places, they stayed Catholic.
All very mixed. You forget
mixed?
Cologne.
Yeah.
The city of in German is Köln.
Right.
But the city of Cologne is in the north, and that was...
Very Catholic.
It was very Catholic.
Okay.
And our founder was from the city of Limburg, which is in Prussia.
Okay.
And still to this day is very Catholic. So even though it was in Lutheran Prussia, the city of Limburg, where he was from, was Catholic.
So the German migration, I understand why Leo House was founded, but if you looked at all the German migration, was it still mostly Catholic or was it
mixed?
No,
it was a huge mix.
Okay.
A huge mix. And they were coming over because of... You know, it wasn't just the Catholic little countries that were absorbed into the into the Second Empire under the William the First as Kaiser, but all of the other little Protestant countries, Hesse and Hanover and, you know, all of those little countries suddenly ceased to exist.
Yeah.
And they were just all grouped into the and so you had enormous waves of immigrants coming out of Hamburg and Bremerhaven going across to the United States.
So let me now jump ahead 100 years or so. David, now you are kind of a relatively newcomer to the work, the mission of Leo House, and you had another career before this one as kind of running Leo House. So how long have you been at Leo House as the kind of the major domo, the chief cook and bottle washer? How long have you been there?
I'm just the humble executive director, Monsignor.
Well, you are the executive director. We'll let others judge about the virtue.
That's right.
How long have you been there?
I've been there since February of last year. So
You happy you're there?
Very much so.
Why?
Because, you know, my wife, Kathleen, even said, you know, in my friends...
It gets you out of the house, you're saying?
Well, that's the first thing she says. Did she speak to you before?
Well, maybe.
And my friend said, you know, Dave, this job fits your whole demeanor, you know. I consider myself very Catholic. And, the Leo House is the only Catholic guest house in America. And when I interviewed with Michael, I said, you know, what's great about the Leo House is that it's not so great that it's an unknown quantity. It's the best kept secret, and it's got the four C's. It's clean, comfortable, cost effective, and Catholic. And as I said to you before, it's the only place in America where you can go to bed at night, wake up and go to morning mass, and say the afternoon chaplet and the rosary all under the same roof at the Leo House.
So let me let you give a plug, because our radio show, Sirius Satellite Radio, the Catholic Channel, is throughout the country. Mm-hmm. You welcoming guests from throughout the country? Would you like people to stay with you?
Oh, absolutely.
You got room?
We do have room, and we're filling up, actually.
We have 81 guest rooms.
Okay.
We do very well with our occupancy, but we have our own website where you can book directly on our website, leohousenyc.org. And, you know, we welcome people from not only all around the country, but all around the world. We have a Miss McCauley, who is our young intern, who's preparing to become a novice at the Abbey of Regina Laudis in Connecticut. She's preparing to become a novice for the Benedictine Order. And she put up a map on our second floor, as it goes to our dining room for breakfast in the morning, of where all of our guests come from. And they come from all over the country, and she pins up the cities, and then all over the world, every country that they're coming from all over the world. And so it's an interesting little site.
So let me, David, I know you're going to want to talk about this. You mentioned this abbey, which is in the suburbs of New York City in Connecticut, mm-hmm. Regina Laudis, which is a Benedictine. I think they're cloistered sisters who are there. They got a pretty famous nun who's part of that, whom you've guys glummed on to, haven't you?
Exactly right. It's Mother Dolores Hart. And as a matter of fact, the Catholic New York had an article that said, "The nun who kissed Elvis Presley."
Oh, hey, wait a minute. This is a family show. We're not
getting into one
of these scandalous movie scenes. So
the devil made me do it.
Okay. So tell us that story about Dolores Hart.
This is a great story, and it's a true story. And the headlines were, "The Nun Who Kissed Elvis Ditched Hollywood and Found Her Calling." Oddly enough, the Human Life Review, Maria McFadden Mafucci, who's the editor, said, "My mother told Mother Dolores when she was on Broadway in the plays, said, and she was burnt out, she said, 'I need a place to go.' Maria McFadden said, 'Why don't you go up to the Abbey of Regina Laudis in Bethlehem, Connecticut, and it'll be a R&R. She went up there and she said something happened that was so special. To make a long story short, she had 7 movie contracts in her hands, and and she left it all to join the Benedictine. She's still up there.
Now, how'd you get in touch with her?
I got in touch with her through, just by pure happenstance, the Holy Spirit had to be involved. You know, it was about 10 years ago where I was driving by a place that had a Gothic sign across out front. And I said, "My God, what's that?" The Abbey of Regina Laudis. I drove back 6 hours later and I saw a shadow on my right side. And I said, "My God, that looks like a nun, but can't be. She's got a blue habit on." Well, I backed up. It was Mother Leoba Postel, my great friend. And I said, "Mother, you were almost roadkill." She said, "I'm too quick. I saw you coming." So I held up my rosary beads. That's my disclaimer that, you know, in the car, that I'm okay. And she said, "Anybody who carries rosary beads around is not that bad." So in fact, I said, "Mother, what is this?" She said, "This is a semi-cloistered Benedictine Abbey, Regina Laudis." And she said, "That's the Angelus bell. I've got to run." I said, "Is there morning mass?" She said, "Yes, 8:00. I said, "I'll see you tomorrow morning." Now, she probably thought, how many people would do that? Well, actually, I went to morning mass at the Abbey there, and a nun, her fellow colleague, came up to me and gave me a little note, said, "Mother Leoba would like to see you after mass." The person who gave me that note is Mother Regina, Margaret Georgina Patton, whose grandfather was none other than General Patton.
Ah.
And so along with Mother Dolores Hart, they're very, very accomplished women, and they're contemplative. And we had at the Leo House, Mother Dolores Hart came down this past May and spoke, as she did last July. So she loves the Leo House, and we love her.
Good.
And it's a win-win situation.
So now, I know, but I'm going to ask for our listeners. By the way, we're speaking with both the president of the board and the executive director of Leo House, which is the face of Catholic hospitality in New York City, David Smith, Michael Konyes, I'm sorry.
That's right.
We're speaking about this face of Catholic hospitality. So, have you had any famous guests who have stayed there?
Yes, we have. We had a lovely ceremony about a year and a half ago in which I had wanted to find it. I knew that Mother Teresa of Calcutta had stayed at the Leo House in the 1960s, but we didn't know exactly when and we didn't know exactly how to find out. Eileen Egan had written a book called Story of the Street, in which it's the biography of Mother Teresa, and she talks about when Mother Teresa stayed at the Leo House. So Sister Marilyn Ellickson, who's our director of development, who's a member of the Congregation of St. Agnes, did the research and found actually the guest book. We do now have a first degree relic from St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, in which she signed the guest book of the Leo House in 1960 when she came. And we also had Mother Anna Dengel, who is the foundress of the Medical Missionary Sisters.
Not quite as much name recognition as the first one.
Not as much name recognition. But their stories are deeply intertwined.
But I want to go back to Mother Teresa. Yeah. How'd she find out about Leo House?
Well, it's the taxi driver who was bringing them in from Kennedy Airport.
Got lost.
No, he didn't get lost. Eileen Egan and Mother Teresa were coming into New York to attend a conference. And Eileen Egan was a great friend and supporter of Mother Teresa's and accompanied her very often on her trips. And but their accommodation plans had fallen through. And they get to the airport, they get into the taxi, and they say, well, we have no idea where we're going to stay. The taxi driver turned to them and says, I have a place for you.
Ah!
And he brought them to the Leo House.
That is a great story.
There's the Archangel Raphael, our patron saint, was, you know, with the Holy Spirit, was saying to that taxi driver, okay, take them to the Leo House.
So how long did she stay there?
I believe about a week.
Okay. That is a great story. So tell me, David, what's your idea for the future of Leo House? I mean, things change and things. Do you have a vision for what you'd like to see Leo House be more of in the future?
Well, I think the challenge for us, Monsignor, is that we have a label such as the best kept secret as Leo House. And prior to becoming the executive director, I was a college professor, and I taught international marketing at regular marketing and introduction to management. And I told the dean of the business school, I would love to teach a course on brands alone, because brand building is such a key thing. And I said to Michael in the board in the interview, I said, you know, the challenge is that the Leo House is the best kept secret. You've got to, you know, enhance, cause brand awareness, brand recognition, and that'll drive brand loyalty. So our challenge is that we want the brand known as the Leo House to become more prevalent. In fact,
so if you're one of those smart professor guys, then I can ask you this question. Tell me about your price point.
Well, our price point is very competitive. We have we have tiers. Double room, single room, with bath. We have joint baths or joint showers. You know. And that's very common in Europe. So the Europeans, who are 40% of our guests at the Leo House, are very amenable to that. You know, but we are very competitive, and we feel that the best bang for your buck, if you will, is to stay at the Leo House. Now, for the 72 million Catholics out there, you know, we said, well, we'll target 10% of that, which is 7 million. Mm-hmm. And we have only 81 rooms. So we have a very fertile, you know, fish barrel to shoot at and market. Yeah.
But some of your rooms do have private baths, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And one of my long-term, we just came through about a few years ago, a $7.5 million renovation project where we renovated. We have two buildings. We used to have three. We sold one of them. And we have two remaining buildings. One is our 8-story Gothic stone structure. Yeah. And next door is an 1870s brownstone. And we spent $7.5 million completely renovating the brownstone and doing an enormous amount of work on the systems side of the main building. Now, my next project that I will probably be spending a good deal of the rest of my life on is renovating I don't want to really change the guest rooms, but all new bathrooms.
Okay.
Plumbing's
important.
Plumbing is important.
Right.
Whether
you're a person or whether you're a building, plumbing
that's
is
right.
important.
When you have about 40,000 people coming to your building every year and using the plumbing very heavily, plumbing is important, as you say.
Right.
So renovating all of our bathrooms is one of my main projects.
Now, again, let me just give you an opportunity because I am just delighted and I'm looking forward to your first inaugural gala to raise some money because you want to keep the price competitive. So you need to raise some money for it. And you're honoring Cardinal Dolan, who's been a good friend of Leo House. So, David, give us a pitch. Tell us what's going on Monday in your first inaugural gala.
Thanks very much, Monsignor. Monday, December 11th. At the Yale Club in New York City.
Which was a day, that's the anniversary of my ordination, December 11th.
Everybody out there whose works, please go to your boss and say, look, this is a day that Monsignor Sullivan was ordained in the Leo House Gala, so I'm taking that day off. The Monsignor said so. And you might have to go to confession after that. But case in point, we're having our first annual gala at the Yale Club. It's the Pope Leo 13th fundraising gala, and it's a very interesting development how all this happened. There was a Father James Hyde in Chicago who was a guest at the Leo House, sent me an email on February 20th and said, look what I found. And what he found in the archives of the Archdiocese of Chicago was the Pope Leo the 13th Award that was started in 1944 by Bishop Scheil, who was the founder of the CYO. Bishop Scheil gave out this award in Chicago from 1944 to 1978 when he died. When he died, the award died. So Father James Hyde found it and said, look what I found. Why doesn't the Leo House resurrect, great term, the award and give it to His Eminence Timothy Cardinal Dolan? So I went to Michael and I said, you know, here's a possibility, a suggestion. What do you think of the board? Well, Michael has always been so good, as well as the board, of basically giving the green light to everything. And so he said, well, you know, I don't know. When would you have it? I said, probably in December, because we're already in February. So I'm trying to buy as much time as I could. And he said, well, that might be a little on the short side. I said, well, if you give the green light, we'll give it our best shot. Well, we have. And it's really coming along well. We're working like bees. And we seat 280 at the Yale Club. We have about 220 tickets sold. So everybody out there, please come to the Yale Club to the first annual Pope Leo inaugural gala on December 11th.
Great. Hey, listen, you guys have been so generous with your time. President, Executive Director of Leo House, David, Michael, thanks so much for being with us. And listen, we're going to do all we can to make sure that everybody in America knows that Leo House is the face of Catholic hospitality in New York City. And so thanks so much for everything you're doing to preserve the legacy of Leo House and to make it even better. And thanks for being a guest on Just Love.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us, Monsignor.
I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Why don't you kind of check out my Just Love blog? You can learn a little bit more about the topics that we have here. Or follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And you learn a little bit more about the topics that we have. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what's going on in much further away in Bangladesh, in Myanmar. So stay tuned with us. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation. We look at what's going on in the world, and we look at it through the prism of our Catholic social wisdom, our Catholic social values. Delighted that we just had on our show the executive director, the president of Leo House, and we talked about the face of Catholic hospitality in New York City. And I'm delighted that we're able to share a little bit of that history in light of their upcoming awarding of the Pope Leo XIII Award for the first time in many years. They're awarding it this year to Cardinal Dolan at their gala in New York City. We're delighted for that. But I want to put a plug. If you're coming to New York City and you're looking for a clean, safe place to live at reasonable accommodations, at reasonable cost, then come to the Leo House. And you can find out all about it online at their website, Leo House. And it's a great place to stay. I live in New York City, so I don't stay in hotels in New York City, but people who've gone there have been really very satisfied with the accommodations, with the atmosphere, and you know, nobody's forced, but there is mass available there in the morning. So it's got a nice atmosphere for those who would like it. I mean, I'll share with you the fact I was at a conference in Germany last April, which I kind of just mentioned, and I stayed at a similar place. It wasn't, it was the Bonhoeffer House in Berlin, and it was a very, very fine place to stay. None of the fancy chandeliers or stuff of some of the glitzy hotels, which are perfectly fine. I've stayed in them too. But this was a very fine guest house. It was welcoming. It was clean. It was a great place to stay, much like the Leo House in New York City. So, Tom, we got any news that we want to share with our listeners?
We do, Monsignor. You know, this past week, obviously, we just entered December, and yesterday was actually World AIDS Day. And the World Health Organization has actually put out some information about that. As our listeners may be aware, HIV/AIDS remains one of the world's most significant public health challenges, and particularly in low- and middle-income countries. And as a result of recent advances in antiretroviral therapy, HIV-positive people can now live longer and healthier lives. And it's been confirmed that antiretroviral therapy prevents onward transmission of HIV. An estimated 20 million people are now receiving HIV treatment in mid-2007. However, globally, only 53% of the 3.7 million people living with HIV have it. But some good progress has been made, Monsignor, in preventing and eliminating mother-to-child transmission and keeping mothers alive. In 2016, almost 8 out of 10 people, women living with HIV, or 1.1 million people, received antiretroviral therapy.
Yeah, the change in kind of what's going on in AIDS is one of those really incredible kind of health phenomena. And it's a public policy issue related, and it's a service issue too. So, I mean, for many years, there was an incredibly strong advocacy on the part of communities that were impacted by AIDS to make sure that the National Institute for Health devoted enough resources to do research, to do treatment there. And in fact, in a generation, the whole disease of AIDS, HIV infection has been radically changed, where it was, boy, not too many years ago, maybe 30 years ago or so, it was really a death sentence. That if you were infected, if you were diagnosed with the infection, boy, there was not much that could be done, and it was a very, very awful, painful, and could be quick death that people suffered. It was awful, a lot of the pain that was going on there. And now, you know, a generation later, it's become still a very serious disease, very costly to treat, but very treatable. It's become a chronic disease that needs to be managed. And even in other parts of the world, in Africa, part of the challenge there was getting the costly drugs to places that were very poor and developing a regimen, a way that they could be administered, a way that there could be education about the need to take them on a regular basis so that they could be effective. Let me give you a little bit of a kind of a personal, not, it's not an anecdotal story, but for us here, Catholic Charities in New York, Catholic Charities in New York was at the forefront of trying to deal with part of that AIDS epidemic going back 30 years or so, when there was that transmission from mother to child of the AIDS virus. And some mothers became so depressed, became so unable to cope with situations that they just left babies in the hospital and they were just boarding in the hospital. So Catholic Charities, with the incredible ingenuity, creativity, dedication of a pastor of a parish in Washington Heights, a religious sister who was involved in it, and a Jewish philanthropist, all came together to create Incarnation Children's Center as a place where those babies who were left in the hospital could come and be treated with dignity, could be treated with compassion, and have a very, very dignified way where they could be cared for. Now, the reality is that many of them died very, very quickly. They maybe lived for a year or two, depending on the situation. And so you had a lot of deaths of babies, a very, very sad situation. But at least for their few years of life, they were treated with dignity. They were treated with respect, which, from our Catholic perspective, it doesn't really do much from a utilitarian perspective. Did they produce much for society? No. Did they take a lot of society's resources? Yes. Did we believe they were made in God's image and likeness? Yes. And therefore, they deserve that dignity, even in a very compromised state. But let me fast forward now to today. Today, there are almost no babies at this same residence. Now it's still filled with 20, 21 individuals, but now they're teenagers because the drugs that are used have kept them alive. And so now it's a chronic issue with the typical problems compounded by the being teenagers, because they know they're living with a very, very dangerous disease, manageable but still dangerous. And now the teenagers going through all those problems of teenage years, of succeeding in school, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Tom, thank you for bringing up the fact that it is that we celebrated World AIDS Day. But I think it's a real lesson to us from a couple of points of view, as us, as from our Catholic perspective. One is that it's important that when there are these real public crises, and this is an epidemiological issue, that part of our Catholic social teaching says that as a policy, as a country, as a society, we need to figure out how we mobilize the resources to deal with it. Resources that can look at treatment, the research, the medicine, but also how we develop programs that can deal with alleviating the suffering, treating people in dignity while they are dealing with that problem or that disease. And, you know, it's no surprise that one of the issues that early on was being treated that was part of the whole AIDS issue was the stigma attached, because there was a high prevalence of the disease and the virus in the gay community and those who were using drugs. And so among many, those were people who were being ostracized. And therefore, some people were saying, well, we shouldn't devote a lot of resources to those populations. Fortunately, as a society, our better angels kind of were able to come out because of a lot of advocacy, a lot of people getting involved and saying, wait a minute, these are people who are our brothers and sisters. They're made in God's image and likeness. Some of them may have made some bad choices in life. Some of them are in very compromised positions for a variety of reasons. But yet, we have a responsibility as a society to do what we can to make sure they can live in dignity, that they can be respected. And so I think this is an example in these days when there's a lot to be depressed about from a public policy point of view, whether it be issues of terror, whether it be natural disasters, whether it be some of the awful rhetoric that is around, whether it be even incidences of asthma in certain poor communities, that there are a lot of things which we say, what can we do about it? Well, I think marking World AIDS Day is a reminder that we can deal with what are seemingly intractable problems when we develop a consensus, when we develop the resources, and when we consider the needs of our neighbors and needs and what we need to do together in order to deal with it. I'm not pretending that we're going to solve all the problems of the world, but all I'm saying is let's not give up and let's tackle those that we can to make our world, as we say, more just and more compassionate. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to be talking about Bangladesh. We'll talk a little bit about Miramar, the Pope's trip, what Catholic Relief Services is doing in those countries. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
I remember you well in the Chelsea Hotel.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We're getting ready to begin Advent, which is the season of preparing for Christmas, the birth of Jesus. I have to confess that of all the liturgical seasons, I think Advent may well be my favorite. It's got a little bit of everything. You know, it's kind of got that hopeful, joyful anticipation of Christmas, the birth of Jesus. And it's also got a little bit of reform, renewal, penance to kind of make sure we're ready for that season. So I kind of like it. I think it's got a lot going for it. And given my problems with attention, I do better with a 4 week Lent, a 4 week Advent, than a 6 week or so Lent. I kind of run out of steam in the fourth, fifth week of Lent. Advent is the right length of time, so I'm looking forward to Advent. So let's now go to our second guest, Carolyn Brennan, who works for Catholic Relief Service, who just recently has been in Bangladesh. And we're going to speak with her about experience. Carolyn Brennan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My most important question for you is, so what are the Longhorns ranked this week?
Oh, I wish I knew. I'm so sorry. I am embarrassed that I don't know. I am so sorry.
Well, you know, if anybody finds out about this, they're going to revoke your degree.
That is true. Yes, that's I need to keep up.
You need
I'm a little,
to need
out
to
of touch.
Need to get. I think they played Texas in the past week or two, didn't they?
They must have. You know, my only excuse is that I've been a little far away, but that I know that's no excuse at all.
You're absolutely right. It is no excuse. I mean, but since Advent is coming up, and we can kind of treat it as a mini Lent, you can do a little you can do a little penance so that you don't get coal from Santa Claus for being a bad person, not knowing how her alumni did.
It's shameful, deeply shameful.
It is. Carolyn, hey, I know that we had a little bit of a scheduling issue, so thanks for adjusting your schedule to be with us on Just Love.
Oh, of course. I am so grateful to be here, so thank you.
You're right. Now, you just came back relatively just from Bangladesh. Mm-hmm.
I did. 2 weeks ago, I came back from Cox's Bazar, which is the very southern eastern district of Bangladesh, right along the Myanmar border. And that is where more than 620,000 refugees from Myanmar have arrived just since August alone. So I was there meeting with many of the refugee families and hearing their stories.
Wow. Say that number again so that our listeners can get a sense of that number.
It is hard to wrap your mind around 620,000 people just since August. And when you see the camps that are filling these hillsides, it's so striking because first, it's one of the largest refugee camps I've ever been in my life in this work, which I've been in for some time. But what's particularly jarring is that these camps didn't exist in July. It was just hillside and mountainside and greenery. And yet now you've got these sprawling camps really filled with families who fled literally at a moment's notice with nothing.
That is really amazing. And I always say this to our listeners because it's really, I think, hard for people to get their hand around this, that right now in the world we have about 22, 23 million refugees that have been forced for a variety of reasons, political terror, violence, sometimes natural disasters, a persecution, to actually cross the border from their native, but their own country to a neighboring thing. And what you witnessed was an additional more than half a million refugees added to that number in just the past 3 months.
That's right. And I was able to be on the border, on the shoreline of a really sleepy harbor town in Bangladesh very early one morning, just as the sun was rising. And as boats were coming in, small boats, we're talking no engine, you know, literally using a row, and just filled to the brim with families. And older adults were carrying their elderly family members who were too weak to walk, and you just saw them carrying them over their shoulder or literally in buckets because they were so frail. And everyone, first, they were so exhausted because even though the boat ride is only an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours from the Myanmar border, it was one leg of a very long journey. Many had fled under duress, under a direct attack at their homes, maybe being set alight, set on fire, being forced to run over several days with their kids, trying to keep quiet, crossing streams in the middle of the night just to get to this boat, just to get here, spending their money and just depleted of any physical strength. and they just want food. So I had so many people coming up to me asking me for a banana or a piece of bread or anything. They were just so hungry. And when you gave a piece of bread, people were using two hands to just, you know, eat it, just putting it into their mouth as fast as they could.
So, Carol, let me ask you this question. You know, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Catholic population of Bangladesh is well under 1%. Miramar is not much higher in terms of that. So why is Catholic Relief Services care about this in a country in which there are almost no Catholics, almost no Christians? And why is Caritas Bangladesh involved in this? This isn't a Christian country. It's not a Catholic country. Why should we be there?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Well, first of all,
I hope you have a better answer than about the Longhorns.
Well, we have always, you know, felt that we help people not because they are Catholic, but because we are Catholic. And these are people who are among the most impoverished and in need in the world right now, right as you and I are talking. There are people fleeing for their lives. And that is the mission of the church, and certainly of Caritas, and Catholic Relief Services is a member of Caritas, is to help those who are in greatest need in the world and to show solidarity and to welcome the stranger, literally. And it's really impressive to see the role that Caritas Bangladesh plays on a regular basis in Bangladesh. It is one of the largest employers in the country. It works all across the country helping people in need, and now in this emergency has redevoted and repositioned its staff and expanding its network of volunteers to respond. And Caritas has an incredible footprint in the country and experience responding to mostly natural disasters and other needs, but boy, are they at the front lines and incredibly seasoned and adept at responding to this.
You know, Karen, I purely by a little bit of coincidence, I know a little bit about Caritas in Bangladesh for two reasons. One, I was in Bangladesh probably a year and a half ago.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it's a little longer than that, after the fire the collapse of the building there. I went with...
And the factory.
Yeah, and went to the factory. We went... as part of kind of an awareness mission and solidarity mission with some of the labor unions and some of the work going on there, and had the opportunity to kind of meet with people from Caritas in Bangladesh, which was one situation. And then I just spoke at a conference last April in Berlin with the director of Caritas in Bangladesh. And again, I think one of the things which I find inspiring and challenging is that apparently Caritas, for being so small numerically in terms of Catholic population, not Caritas, it really is, as we would say, batting well above its average in terms of the respect, the penetration, the work that they are doing in being the arm of compassion, the arm of help to a population there. And so what you're telling our listeners certainly just merely reinforces what kind of a little bit of my, you know, coincidental experience has been.
It's so true. And just it almost has the ability to play a neutral role too in dialogue and being able to demonstrate this provision of services based entirely on need and not on your ethnic background or religious background. That is something that is deeply appreciated and witnessed and noticeable. And it really aids in the strength and reputation and ability, really, of Caritas and all of the partners like our agency, CRS, to respond in a place with the trust and relationships built on the ground.
So let me go a little bit step further, and I'm not going to ask you to kind of offer an opinion about things that you're kind of uncomfortable with, but I'll ask the question to see if you have any reaction to it. Obviously, sure. When the Pope goes someplace, he's not going on vacation, and he's going, and he's got an agenda. Let's be fair about it. And all agenda means is you want to get something done. And so he's going to these places. He's obviously got an agenda because he named two cardinals of those places who nobody thought should be cardinals, given the fact that they're not major capitals. And going to a place, again, he's the leader of the Catholic Church. He's going to countries where Catholics are a minority. But so why'd he bother going?
Because the need is significant and urgent, and we are so great. I mean, I personally, just having been there and just seeing the need, but I know as an agency, we are all so grateful that he is using his platform to bring the spotlight to this emergency, and that he does it is so remarkable and important because these can be very isolated crises. Maybe they are a blip on our radar for a short period of time, but they can disappear from our attention pretty quickly just because there's unfortunately a variety of news and emergencies happening around the world and at home. And so we might not have a long attention span, even though the needs are severe and in many cases life-threatening. So the fact that his presence is there, he's shining a spotlight, is so significant and I think speaks to a larger call of humanity and solidarity for our brothers and sisters around the world and invites hopefully a dialogue for discussion and support for these people who are in tremendous need.
So good or bad that he apparently met with the alleged bad guys? He met with the, supposedly it was reported, with the military leaders who allegedly are kind of being pointed at as those who are causing those 600,000 or so people to flee and become refugees. Good that he met with the bad guys or bad that he met with the good guys?
You know, I don't know of his specific agenda in the country, yeah. But I do think that the call for dialogue discussion on measures to help alleviate the conflict is really important. And for somebody of his stature to be able to invite a conversation and call for humanity and solidarity, which were the messages of the day yesterday when he was in Myanmar. And I anticipate tomorrow, I'm very excited for him to go to Bangladesh tomorrow. I think it is very hopefully ultimately helpful for those who are in need.
Hey, Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for your accommodating our schedule with being here. And thank you for what Catholic Relief Services is doing in Bangladesh and so many places, and particularly the respect that Catholic Relief Service always shows in working through the local Catholic charities, Caritas organizations to respect the people who are on the ground there. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and I wish you a very, very blessed Advent.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the time and attention. And, you know, we are just an extension of the American Catholic community, so we're doing this on behalf of
get invited back, I want you to know how the Longhorns have done the previous week.
I will be prepared.
Carolyn Brennan, the Communications Director of Emergencies for Catholic Relief Services. She has just been back from Bangladesh, which is a place which is now the host in the past 3 months for moreover a 500,000 refugees who have been driven out of their neighboring native country of Myanmar. You know, we are getting ready for Advent, and Advent is a time which I always look forward to because it is a time where we get, I think, a little bit of change to reset. And most of us get into habits. Hopefully a lot of those habits are really good. Some of them not so good. And maybe we get into a routine that needs to be broken. What I like about the liturgical seasons, it almost gives you an external excuse to do what you know is the right thing internally. So I'm encouraging you, make Advent a real time of change, of preparation, of joy, getting ready for the birth of Jesus. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.